Why did we ordain as monks in the Buddhist religion? Why did we become monks? If not for one goal, for the goal to overcome dukkha. We should not forget this. We didn't become monks because of the status as monks. We became monks because it gives us the perfect opportunity and the perfect surrounding for ending dukkha. And this we always should remember. We didn't become monks for teaching others. We didn't become monks, you know, for having a certain status or as a way of life. And what is the work of a monk? The true work of a monk is sitting in samadhi and walking chongkrom. That is the true work of a sasana, of somebody, of a recluse. Everything else, I mean, we have to live in a community, and while living in a community, there's work to be done, keeping up our kutis, you know, sweeping our kutis, keep them clean, keep the vat clean, the monastery clean, and so on. Repaying this and repaying that, that is all the work. But if you have noticed, I mean, the work here or the duties here in the monastery are very minimal. So I mean, the rest of the time, I mean, we have for practice. Practicing. Practicing samadhi, practicing panya. And of course, as a monk, you know, we keep the 227 rules. So, I mean, all in all, when you look at this, sila, samadhi and panya, I mean, we have it covered. Samadhi is the ability to concentrate one mind into one-pointedness. Not that the mind is not going out to this sensation or that sensation, but just stays still at the point of concentration. Be it the breath, be it the in-breath or the out-breath, or be it at the tip of the nose, or just be the mental repetition of the word Buddha. From there it doesn't stray, or we does not allow it to stray away. That is training ourselves in samadhi. And this will lead to the awareness of the breath. That will lead to sati. I mean, if you don't have awareness of the breath, I mean, our meditation is not going to work. We will not be able to focus or concentrate. So we have to be awareness of each Buddha or each in-breath or each out-breath. Being aware, you know, of the quality of the breath or being aware of the quality of the Buddha. This is of utmost importance. Sati, I mean, sati is the one thing, you know, that shows us everything. It is just like opening our eyes. The Lord Buddha compared the people with blind people running around in the world not knowing what they are doing. And when you're blind, you not just run through the forest, and I mean, you will get into all kinds of danger. You will hit your head, you will stumble, you will be bitten by snakes, you know, or devoured by tigers. Once you open your eyes, you see all these dangers and can get out of the way of it. And that is sati, this awareness, this eye-opener. Once we open our eyes, we see the dangers that are lurking in the dark. It's also, you can also compare it with a flashlight. Wherever you shine the flashlight, that's where you know what is there. If you go into a dark cellar and don't have a flashlight, you will stumble about this box or that box, you know, and you will fall, and you know, you will hit your head because you don't see. So sati is for us to see things and to be aware of the things that are going on. So mindfulness is not the right thing, not the right word to translate sati. Mindfulness is just being, full, our mind is full of the things, you know. Maybe it's just one thing that is in our mind, but it's still full of this. And you know, just like I'm walking chongkrom. I'm good at walking chongkrom. We constantly think that, and our mind is full with this, I'm walking chongkrom. Or even I have sati, you know. But not being aware of the other things that are going on. Being awareness, and when we are really aware of the breath, or when we are really aware of the Buddha, we know all the things that are going on in our citta. We know all the things that are going on in our mind. If there's a thought, if there's a memory, you know, if there's another person, and so on. But our mind, when we have sati, is not reacting. It's just observant. Just observe the things coming in and in contact with the mind or with the citta. And it stays at that. It doesn't react to it. I mean, the moment we react to something, that is the work of the kilesas. So, I mean, this sati, this pure awareness, just being aware of what is going on. Being aware there's a sensation coming through the ears, or a sensation coming through the eyes, or a sensation of touch, or a sensation of taste, you know, at the tongue. The reaction tells us, you know, this is beautiful, or this is not beautiful. This is loathsome, or this is admirable. That's the reaction of it. That comes from the kilesas. Awareness just tells us this, there's a taste, huh? There's a taste, and that is sour, or that is sweet, or that is bitter, or that. And that's it. That's awareness. A sense form, when we see something, it just tells us there is form. There is this kind of form and there is this kind of color. When we hear something, that's just a sound. That's this kind of sound. The moment we classify it as bird, you know, or noise, or speech, or something like that, that is already the work of the kilesas. Sati is just pure awareness, just this pure awareness that just is aware of things. And that's where we can see the movement of the kilesas. That's where we can get a picture of where they are. Notice always, you know, that the kilesas are working in the darkness. I mean, and when you compare sati with the light, I mean, wherever you shine your light on, there can't be any kilesas. So train the sati. And I mean, we can't train the sati while reading or while doing this or while doing that. We can train it only while we concentrate on one point, and then we know instantly when the mind wanders off this point, be it the point of the breath at the tip of the nose or be it the point of Buddha. It knows instantly when the mind goes off. It sees the movement of the mind. That is this awareness. This is the sati. That's of utmost importance. And we have to train it, you know, just like we trained ourselves to speak, we trained ourselves to walk. Now we have to train ourselves to have sati. So don't confuse it with mindfulness. Always, although you read whenever you read a book, you know, sati is always translated of mindfulness. Yeah? Being mindfulness of a task is not similar. It's not the same as being aware of what is going on in our citta. We don't even know, you know, we don't even know the meaning. When we scrub the floor, you know, we are aware of the movements of the body, or we are aware of the sensations of the body, but we don't know at that moment that we are scrubbing the floor. When we are mindful, we know that we are scrubbing the floor, and that's why we miss all these other things, the little movements of the citta. So sati is just this pure awareness. Remember this well. I mean, it is a most important factor on the path of enlightenment. So I mean, train samadhi in order to foster this sati. Samadhi is the concentration on one point. I mean, the more we are aware of that one point, the more we develop sati. And concentration on this one point, you know, leads us to some stillness of the mind, to some quietude, to some peacefulness, to some happiness. When we enter the first stage of samadhi, upachara samadhi, you know, or just samadhi, you know, where there is no more thought, you know, where there is just the breath or just the Buddha, and no more thinking going on, that's when we enter peacefulness or stillness. I mean, the longer we stay, the stiller it becomes. And that's where we can rest ourselves from all the hassles that we have gathered during the day. And that is the importance of samadhi. If we go even further, you know, and stay put on our meditation object, be it the breath or be it the Buddha, then we can go into the apana samadhi. Apana samadhi is the deep state of samadhi, where everything disappears. And it's so still, and all what is left is just knowingness. We dip in one moment and we come out the next moment. And in the meantime, you know, maybe an hour has passed, 2 hours has passed, or sometimes even a day has passed, without even us noticing the time and the room, the time and the space we were in, because we just dipped in and then dipped out. That is apana samadhi. But we know we haven't slept. That's all what we can say. We knew. Knew, we didn't know about any other object, we didn't know about any sense contact, we didn't know anything about this, we just knew that we know. That's all what you can say about the state of apana samadhi. Just knowing. Pure knowingness without an object, or single-pointedness. You can also describe it as single-pointedness of mind. I mean, if the mind is single-pointed, you know, there cannot be any other point. There cannot be any object. Otherwise, the moment there is object, there is the world. The moment our mind gathers into one point, all of the world disappears. I mean, the space and the time collapses, the body disappears, and the whole world of sensation disappears. That's the state of apana samadhi. That's what we also can call the first wonder of meditation. I mean, the moment you come out, you want to go back into again, because it's so peaceful, it's so resting, it's so energetic. The moment we come out, we feel energetic. Huh? And then our mind is really sharp. And whatever, you know, we put it on to concentrate on, it penetrates it. Because it's just sharp as a laser, you know, and the laser penetrates everything within a second. Within a split second, we can see, we can understand. And that's the path to develop wisdom, understanding. Understanding not with our mind, you know. We can figure out, or we can try to figure out, we can ponder this and we can ponder that, and we come to this conclusion or that conclusion. But that has nothing to do with the nature of things. The nature of things can only be understood by penetrating it. Once we penetrated it, we understand it, and we don't have to recall this understanding, because the understanding is burned deep within our heart, also called insight. And we can only gather it by showing the heart, by putting our concentration onto this spot, you know, and observe it and watch it, you know, dissect it, you know, pull it apart and put it back together, just like we do with the body. In order to understand the nature of our body, we have to pull it apart and put it together, pull it apart and put it together. When we pull it apart, we see the ugliness of the body. When we put it together, we see the beauty of the body. And then we pull it again, you know, until pull it apart again and put it together again, until we understand the nature of beauty or the nature of ugliness. Or we pull it apart and then put it together until we understand the nature of the body. If we understand the nature of the skin, then we understand the nature of the organs. If we understand the nature of one organ, then we understand the nature of the body itself. Because it all is one and the same thing. So no matter what we concentrate on, be it the hair of the body, or be it the skin, or be it the liver, or whatever, or be it the flesh, the muscles, the bones, you know? Once we understand the nature, you know, we understand it all. So, that is the way how to train our wisdom. Wisdom concerning the body. It's the same thing we try to understand dukkha vedana, or in the feeling. Feeling come and feeling go. Understand, when you're sitting, understand painful feelings. Where is this painful feeling? What is it? How is it? You know, is it point wise? Is it area wise? You know, where does it sit? You know, once we can see it, once we can concentrate it on, we look at it. Where does it sit? Is it in the skin? When it is, you know, and then we question. When it is in the skin, why don't I feel pain always? Is it in the muscles? Is it in the flesh? Is it in the bones? Where actually is it? And the longer we can concentrate on this pain, I mean, then we will see it, how it jumps from one point to the next. First it was in our right knee, and then it jumps to the left knee, then it jumps to the back, you know. And when we have investigated the right knee long enough, you know, the pain was there maybe 5 or 10 minutes, you know, and suddenly, you know, it just disappears, you know, as nothing has happened, and appears somewhere else. So how can the pain then be in the muscle? Huh? How can the pain be in the bones or in the nerves or wherever you think they are? If it can jump from one point to the other, so you have to follow that pain, yeah? and get to know where it comes from. Where does it actually come from? It seems, you know, and in the beginning when it's pain, you know, it seems so much that it is in the body, that it is, you know, a product or byproduct of the body. But the more we investigate pain, you know, the more we see that it's actually not part of the body. It's just a painful feeling. So where is it? Where does it come from? That's the path of our investigation of dukkha vedana. We have to understand it. We have to completely understand it. So we have to follow it. I mean, of course, we can't take it. You know, the first time in 5 minutes or 10 minutes, the pain becomes excruciating, so we stop. I mean, when we practice, we should never give up. That's a key. That's a key to success. But we have to give up. So how do we give up? By not giving up. We give up and saying, okay, now I can't take it anymore. But the next time I will investigate it more thoroughly. And I will stay longer with it. You know, I'll have to penetrate it. That's how we lose, by not giving up. We don't give up, you know. We say, no, that is too much, you know. I mean, I don't want to do it again. That's completely giving up. And with that, we give also up the hope, you know, to ever become free of dukkha. Because that seems to be, at the beginning of our practice, the body is the biggest problem, is the biggest dukkha. It's the biggest source of dukkha. It's the biggest source of our dissatisfaction. When we are hungry, we are dissatisfied. When we are sleepy, we are dissatisfied. When we are thirsty, we are dissatisfied. When we are sitting, we are dissatisfied. But to understand, you know, where this dukkha vedana comes from, that's why we have to investigate. It doesn't come from the body. The body doesn't want anything. The body is just a thing. It's just a biological thing, you know, that has its own rhythm. It's born, you know, and waits until it dies. It develops this and develops that, but the pain, the body doesn't know any pain. The body completely is ignorant of pain. It doesn't even know what pain is. All it knows is how to repair itself. If it can't repair itself, you know, it just dies. No? And the body doesn't feel any pain when it dies. No? So where is the pain? Where does the pain come from? Who feels it? That is the path of investigation of dukkha vedana. And this is the thing that we have to do. We have to understand the nature of the body. We have to investigate dukkha vedana. I mean, all these things will not happen on the first night, you know, when we start investigation. So we have to investigate it one time, twice, you know, 10 times, 100 times, 1,000 times, 1,000,000 times, huh? Until it becomes clear in our heart. Don't believe your kilesas when they say after the 10th time, now I understand it, where it's coming from. You just assume. Assumption is not knowing. Assumption goes wrong all the time. We have to know within our heart. Once the heart knows it, lets go. Our mind cannot let go. It will still feel attached to this knowledge or that knowledge. It will feel attached to this assumption or that assumption. So don't think that you understand something. Ask your heart if it understands it, you know, and the heart clearly tells you if it understood something or not. And if you haven't understood it, then just go and do it again. Understand, you know, what is pain. Yeah? If you think you understood what is pain and where it comes from, because you have read so many books and you know it comes from the citta, I mean, that is still an understanding that is born in the brain and not born in the heart. Once the heart understands where the pain comes from and who creates the pain and who stops the pain, I mean, it will not be bothered by pain anymore. And the kilesas will not going to use it anymore. The kilesas only use these things, you know. They use anger, they use fear, they use this pain, you know, to distract us from our path of practice. Distract us from our samadhi, distract us from our investigation, you know, telling us now it's enough, you know, now we've done enough, you know? And then pat themselves on the shoulder and say, yeah, you're a good boy, you know. I mean, if you see this patting on your shoulder, then ask, what did I learn? And then instantly you realize that you haven't learned anything. So don't get fooled by these kilesas. But also don't be disparaged, you know, when you get fooled. You know, just say, okay, next time I'll make it better. Huh? And next time just maybe, you know, 5 or 10 minutes later or maybe the next day. Just don't give up. I mean, if you give up, you know, we lose our right to go to deliverance of dukkha. We lose our right, you know, to end the dukkha. The moment we give up, you know, we give up everything. We just get stuck. Like, you know, when we travel from here to Beijing, you know, I mean, if we give up, you know, in Chiang Mai and said, oh, that's too far, and that is, now it's always mountain range, you know, with wild tigers, you know, I'm not going there, you know. I mean, you will not reach Beijing. And there is no easy way, there is no shortcut to it. The shortcut is only sati. The more sati we have, the more objective we see things, and the easier it is. I mean, if you have little sati, I mean, the things are very subjective. So pain is very, so we will be very attached to pain. But if sati is there, pain is just pain. We just see, we instantly understand the nature of pain. Pain is just pain. And there's nothing to be against it and there's nothing to be for it. There's no admiration for pain or there's no disgust from pain. It's the same thing with the body. The little sati, if we have only little sati, I mean that our body becomes really disgusting. Yeah? I mean, we can throw up. We can have the feeling to throw up when we look at the inside of the body, when we look at the inside of our stomach, you know, what we've eaten today, you know, was what looked so nice in the bowl, you know, and then once it got down through our teeth, you know, and down the throat into our stomach, and it's brewed up in something, you know, that is completely disgusting. You know? Just the smell and the sight of it, you know, makes us throw up. If you have sati, I mean, we just see it as it is. There's nothing disgusting about it. It's just the nature of it. But because we are so attached to this body, I mean, that's why we love it. We always love to shuffle something in, you know. We pour all the senses in the world that we can get, you know. We just suck in. You know? Be it through the eyes, or be it through the nose, or be it through the mouth, or be it through the ears, huh? Or be it through the body, through touching, or be it through thinking, we just suck it all in, you know. I mean, who is ever going to digest all these sense inputs, huh? And it takes a long time. And the more we store and put away, and put away, and put away, and then we start practicing, all these stored away sense inputs come out, huh? And bother us. Ah, yeah, I saw that, yeah, I saw that, you know. Is there a meaning to it? No, there's no meaning to it. And just let it go. And when we train samadhi, just let it go. When we do investigation, if it's not connected to the object of investigation, just let it go. Pass it by. Don't hold on to it. You know, just let it go freely. And over time, you know, the citta will become more and more empty, you know, and all the things that are remain are is the objects of our work, you know. Be the breath coming in, breath coming out, and just peacefulness and peacefulness and happiness and stillness. Or be the object of investigation and all our thoughts are turning around of the object of investigation. What does it look like, you know, when I put it out in the air, how does it react to, you know, when I slice it up, how does it look like? When I burn it up, how does it look like? When it's soaked up with water, how does it look like? I mean, that's where our thoughts turn around. The thoughts only turn around investigation of this object. I mean, when I die, you know, how do I look like? What is death, you know? Then investigate death. The more we, you know, the Lord Buddha, you know, frequently suggested us, you know, to reflect about death. What is it? What is the death of the body? The chitta never dies. It's the same, you know, the body is just the same as a car, you know. When our car crashes and we have to put it to the junkyard, I mean, then we just look for a new car. We are not, you know, we don't feel any pain when the car crashes. Except for our mental pain of attachment to this car. But the moment we see it's crashed, okay, then we go and look for another one. So what is there to be so afraid about death? The driver of the car, the chitta, just goes to the next place. We are just so afraid because, I mean, there's a lot of bad things in our chitta that draw us down into the lower realms. That's why we are afraid of death. People, you know, who have done only good, you know, in their life, they will not be afraid of death. Because only what awaits them are good things. The more we have done bad things, you know, the more we can be afraid. But that shouldn't discourage us as practitioners. I mean, we are here to rinse out all the evil, or to root out all the evil that is in our heart. Every thought, you know, that is evil or has evil intention or has bad intention, we're going to root out, you know. We're going to root out and replace it with a nice thought. When we have the thought about stinginess, that we want something for ourselves, then we just give it. Give it away. Root it out in this way, you know, just replace it with a thought of generosity. When we have the thought of envy, you know, then just share with other people. That's how we get rid of evil. But we don't get rid of the root of evil. Because the root of evil, the root of greed and the root of hate is born in our body, or is rooted there in our body. I mean, only the investigation of body lets us get rid of greed and hate. Be perceptive. You know, it's the same thing as awareness. I mean, I stressed awareness in the beginning. Be perceptive. You know, not only think about yourself. When I see you running around, I mean, all what you think is, how am I looking, how am I doing, what am I doing, you know. Thinking about yourself. You're not that perceptive, you know, in knowing what is going on around you. Be more perceptive in what is going on around you. See what other people are doing, how they are reacting, and then fit in. I mean, if you remember, the path of practice or the path to the end of dukkha is the overcoming of our ego. So, I mean, there's nothing more bothering us, you know, on this path of practice than our ego. And what is our ego? It's our self. What is our self? It's our views and opinions we have about us and about others. And that's bothering us most. So be perceptive, be submissive, you know. Just give in. Somebody tells you to do something, then be grateful that somebody is teaching you, and then just go ahead and do it. Don't have any reaction towards. Don't resist. Don't resist these things, because what is resistance? Nothing else than our ego, nothing else than ourselves. I mean, it's a very, very tough path for us to practice. I mean, and we're lacking in so many things compared to the Thais. We're lacking in respect. We're lacking in generosity. And we're lacking in gratitude. In each of the Western languages, we have thank you, thank you, thank you. Getting rid of our gratitude. Now we have to get rid of the thank you and install our gratitude. Just being grateful for something is given to you. Be grateful if somebody, you know, teaches you. Be grateful, you know, if you can do something for somebody. I mean, just remember, I mean, within the monastery, I mean, there's no low work and there's no high work. Don't think, you know, that although, you know, the work of practice is, you know, walking chankam and sitting in samadhi. All the other work we still have to do. But, you know, sweeping the floor, you know, or cleaning the toilet, nothing of it is as higher. There is no higher value to sweeping the floor than cleaning the toilet. Cleaning the toilet is of no lower work, you know, washing clothes, you know, or wiping this. Huh? I mean, just think of it, you know, just this is work, you know, and have utmost sati. Huh? No, I don't want to do this. I mean, we are so good, you know, in the West and have classified, you know, all this low work, you know, keep the treasures, you know, I mean, this low workers, you know, and high workers, you know, are the blue collar workers or the white collar workers, you know, they only think, you know, their brains. I mean, neither thinking nor cleaning the toilet. I mean, it has the same value. Don't think about, you know, of anything, you know, having more value than the other. If we have to do this kind of work, then just let's do it and let's go on with our practice. And practice this. You know, I mean, you do have to get, you know, into samadhi. I mean, be it at least, you know, upachara samadhi or the samadhi where you don't think anymore, where you just have a peace, where you just have a break, where you just can rest. And when you come out, you feel refreshed and energetic. And remember this, be perceptive, you know, let go of your ego, let go of your conscious thought that tell you what is around you. It's nothing but the kilesas. I mean, I sometimes call it KBC, Kilesas Broadcasting Company. I mean, just like we're sitting in a football stadium, you know, knowing what, you know, these 11 or 22 players, we know and see the ball, you know, going on, but we still believe much more the commentator, you know, who tells us what is going on the football field than our own eyes. And that's the same thing. You know, just look, you know, don't believe, you know, oh, I'm doing fine. Who is telling you this? I mean, it's nothing else than the voice of Kilesa, nothing else than this KBC. I'm doing good. I'm doing bad. You know, it tells me, oh, my practice is not going well. Who tells you this, huh? I mean, think about it. I mean, there are two souls inhabiting our chest, just like Goethe said. I mean, one is the Dhamma and the other is the darkness. It's a kilesa. So, I mean, when we start practicing, I mean, the kilesas certainly, you know, have more power than the Dhamma. I mean, the Dhamma has hardly any time, you know, to crop up. It's a little seed, you know, that can be trampled on by the kilesas all the time. So, I mean, look at it, you know. I mean, just don't believe it, you know. I mean, constantly, you know, just go around, you know, and constantly somebody is telling you within your own heart, you know, or within your own mind, what you're doing. You know? What this is and what that is, you know, if this is good or if that is good. I mean, get rid of this voice. And then you're at peace, you know, you're really, truly at peace if you get rid of this voice. Who tells you, ah, now this bird is chirping, you know? I mean, it's so nice, you know, I would like, you know, to keep it on forever. Huh? Or that, you know, that chicken, you know, I mean, just gets on my nerves, huh? Who tells you that? I mean, over there is a sound. Huh? That is where awareness, you know, is at its best, you know? It's just being aware of the sound. Huh? Nothing else. There's no comment about the sound. There's no quality about the sound. There's just sound or just taste, you know, and there's no comment about it. Oh, that's nice. I want more of it, you know. That's all the kilesas, huh? So, I mean, if you know this, you know, just look at your own heart and you see how full it is. So, do good, you know. When you take care of me, you know, just, you know, I mean, remove your ideas, you know, how it should be. And be perceptive, you know. Be perceptive, you know, what I need and what I don't need. You know? How it is done, how it is to be done. Hmm? You cannot learn it, you know, by somebody telling you, because each time it's different. So, I mean, be perceptive, you know, understand the principle. Once you understand the principle, I mean, wherever you are, in whatever situation it is, you can do it. But to understand the principle, I mean, you can't get it. You can't, you just can't conclude it, you know. This time he does it like this, next time he does it like that, you know. I mean, what is the principle? Or keeping my ropes dry, I mean, what is the principle? I mean, you have to feel, you know, if the wet is damp, I mean, you shouldn't lie it, you shouldn't hang it out, you know, because it becomes more damp, much damper. Hmm? And so on, and so on. Hmm? You have to understand the principle. I mean, it's the same thing with the kilesas. If you understand the principles of the kilesas, I mean, you can cut them out. If you just understand, you know, I just, you know, like, you know, you want to fell a tree, you know. I mean, all what you do is you cut off the leaves, you know, cut off this leaf, cut off this leaf, cut off leaves, you know. Because you don't understand when the root of the problem is. Huh? And then at the moment, you know, you cut off these leaves, and then you go to the next branch and you cut off those leaves, or you cut off little branches. I mean, the other branch, you know, grows leaves again. So what's the use of it? Huh? Understand the principle and then cut off the whole branch. And then this branch won't grow again. Hmm? And cut off the next branch, you know, until you see the stem of it. You know? And then you can start working on the stem of the tree. Hmm? And then you can fell it. So it's not going to be born again, or it cannot grow again. But if you leave the root in, you know, it will grow out again. Hmm? Just look, you know, I mean, we are living in the nature. Just look at the nature and you will see it everywhere. Hmm? I mean, we completely have to uproot things, you know, to get rid of them. So we completely have to uproot the kilesas, you get rid of them. Hmm? So be perceptive. Don't judge. No? Just, you know, see everything with an open mind. Don't see it, you know, oh, this is happening or that is happening, because that is already the comments of the kilesas. Just open your eyes and see. Huh? Open your eyes and open your ears and hear. That's the principle when we become monks, you know, to live in a monastery. When we go to another monastery, we do the same thing. Yeah? And within 2 or 3 days, we understand the principles of how this monastery is run, and we completely can fit in. If you have to ask, this is done like this, you know, I mean, it changes over time. And that is the most difficult for us. Because we as Westerners have been trained, you know, in these rules and regulations. This is done like this, that is done like that, that is done like that. So we want to understand everything, you know, how it's done. And no matter if it rains or if the sun shines, you know, we hang out the ropes. Because we don't, there is no rule about it, you know, when the sun shines, we should hang it out. When the rain, you know, we should keep it in. There was no rule about this. Because in the West we didn't need this rule. We always hang it up in our cellar, hmm? Where it's dry near the heating place. Hmm? So we didn't need this room, right? But here we do need it. So think about it. And with this I want to end. I offer this for your reflections.